Okay, we are live on Instagram and welcome to everyone. I'm kind of new at this, so I'm not sure. I can see some people joining. Saroj, Sarvabhauma, Kairava, Karunika. Okay, I try to keep up. Everything's moving. So thank you so much. Some people have been asking me why I've decided to go onto social media. I guess for the last 20 years, I avoided social media. I was kind of living in my own bubble as a hermit and coming out periodically. But I guess I'm in a phase in my life now where I really want to try and share more. Whatever I've learned from others. So that's what I'm going to try and do. And thank you, everyone. You're all waving virtually. Thank you so much. It looks like there's about 30 or 40 people online. Thank you so much for joining. I know it's late in the evening and you've had a busy day, but we're going to hopefully have a bit of a good discussion. So many of you have already sent many questions, and I'm going to try and get through some of those. Yeah, send your heart, send your love. Monks aren't used to this, so it's all very nice. So what you can do is try to put your questions in the chat. I'm not quite sure how I'm going to be able to keep up with all these comments, but yeah. If you put your question in the chat, if you haven't managed to already do it, then we can try and get through that. And we're going to go on for about 45 minutes. I'm going to try and keep the questions short and hopefully sweet and hopefully to the point. And while we're waiting for a few others to join, I will just say a few prayers to our teachers. From whom we get all of this beautiful knowledge. And yeah, thank you to so many of you who are joining. I really, really appreciate it. So yeah, wherever you are, you can fold your hands, close your eyes, and pray that we can enter a little bit deeper into the mysteries of all this knowledge. Om Agyanatimirandhasya Gyananjanashalakaya चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः नमो विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादी पाश्चात्यादेशतारिणे श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्णा हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। सो थैंक यू Sanjay Hari, Casey Sock National, Nisha, thank you, Divyesh, old friends. Okay, so we're going to get started, and I'm going to try and get through some of the questions that some of you sent me. I've got here another phone. I'm surrounded by phones, so I'm going to try and get through some of these questions. And remember, if you do have a question, then just whack it on the chat, and I'll try to do my best, whatever I can, to share that with you. So the first question is an anonymous question because it's a question which is close to someone's heart. And the question is, how do we forgive a loved one who has hurt us? This is such a big thing. Many of you have heard me say in the past that the goal of life is not to remember all the terrible things that someone has done to you, but the goal of life is to remember all the wonderful divine things that are happening to you by the will of providence every single day. But while we're hijacked by all of these thoughts, these negative emotions, this bitterness towards others, it really doesn't facilitate us to move forward. In Krishna consciousness, in the spiritual knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, three things help us to forgive. The first thing is we develop a deeper vision of ourselves. And what is that deeper vision of ourselves? We realize that we are souls on a journey through different chapters of life. And whatever I'm experiencing in this chapter is connected to things I've done in previous chapters. This is a chapter of life, but it's not a chapter which is in isolation. And so what that means is that when someone sends some negativity towards us, when someone seemingly does something unreasonable, illogical, impulsive, something hurtful, we know that that's something to do with me. It's not just about that person. That was an experience I had to go through. That was something I needed to experience. That was something coming to me connected to my own previous acts. And so the first reason why it becomes easier in spirituality to forgive is we realize that other people are just the messengers of my karma. Other people are just delivering me lessons that I need to learn. It could be this person or it could be that person. It could come in this way or it could come in that way. But I don't hold the messengers of my karma responsible. I take responsibility myself. And so when we do that, it's very, very empowering because it helps us to realize that if I cause myself pain due to previous actions and now I have to go through trouble, it means that if I act in a different way now, then I can make sure I don't experience such things in the future. So we can forgive because we realize that it's always connected to our own acts in previous lives. Another reason why we can forgive is because we realize that when we're humble and we look at ourselves, we realize I also made many mistakes. I also was unkind to others. I also fell prey to the human weakness of causing harm and anxiety to someone else in small or big ways. And therefore, we realize that people are weak. Humans are weak. Humans make mistakes. And so when we see someone fall prey to that weakness, then we realize that's a human weakness. And I shouldn't write someone off because of that, because everyone's going on their journey. And when someone exhibits their weakness towards me, then I don't take it as a personal thing. I just realize that's something that that person is going through and I happen to be on the receiving end of it. And finally, the third way in which we can develop forgiveness is to realize that the world is meant to be uncomfortable. The world is meant to be full of injustice. The world is meant to be imperfect. But the Bhagavad Gita explains the world is perfectly imperfect. In other words, all of the injustice, all of the uncomfortableness of this world is meant to remind us that we're not made for this world, that we're meant to get out and go to a higher realm where we can be free of all these things. So forgiveness surrounded by this amazing philosophy is possible. The greatest personalities in our tradition were able to forgive even in the face of the greatest injustices because they were empowered with this knowledge. So thank you so much. Okay, there's so many comments here. I don't know how to navigate it all, but I'm just going to go to whatever I can see. And Bhakti and Richa has asked a question. She's saying, divinity, Krishna, is everywhere, but many times she feels overwhelmed because she's far away from spiritual places or she's far away from spiritual people. How can she experience Krishna? How can she experience the presence of divinity despite being very, very far away? One of my great teachers, he once was asked, have you seen the face of God? And he said, I don't know how many times I've seen the face of God, but I see the hand of God every single day. And so one way I want to share with you, Bhakti Nricha, that you can experience God or experience divinity in your life is just take some moments to reflect every single day at the things that have happened. Now it's 8:10 in the evening and the majority of the hours of this day have passed. But you could tonight, for 5 minutes, just think about everything that happened today, all of the different people you met, all of the different experiences you went through, and you can start seeing divinity. You can start seeing the hand of God. You can actually begin to perceive the arrangements that the divine is making in your life every single day. We just have to open our eyes. And so in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that he's everywhere. For one who's developed spiritual vision. And one other thing I want to say is it's easier to see divinity or God or Krishna throughout your day when you begin the day by fixing your meditation on that divinity, on Krishna. And so the early morning meditation and the early morning spiritual practice that we do is so powerful, because what it does is it fine-tunes us so that during the day we can see divinity manifesting through people. We can see divinity manifesting through situations. We can see divinity manifesting itself through different experiences or challenges that we go through. We can see divinity talking to us through the different messages that we get. Life becomes a live interaction with the spiritual source of everything. KNB Krishna is asking, how do you reconcile when some texts say you get no sin from animal sacrifice, and in the Bhagavatam where Narad tells someone that animals are waiting for him in the afterlife to give him karma? Okay, so just to give a little bit of context to the question, generally harming any other living being is something that is completely discouraged in spiritual culture. However, when certain recommendations or allowances or certain directives are given to engage in animal sacrifice is for a higher purpose, is for a higher purpose to actually give benefit to that animal by engaging in a spiritual sacrifice which will elevate it to a higher birth. And therefore, in genuine animal sacrifice, where the goal is to benefit the animal and the goal is to benefit society, the goal is for some higher purpose more than one's own personal aggrandizement or gratification, then there's no karma involved. But in the case of Magrari, who was a hunter who was almost killing for joy, killing for entertainment, killing for personal gratification, that type of killing will have deep ramifications. And therefore, it's something really to look at the world we're living in which there is so much harm towards others, and we kind of think, that's why we see so much violence towards human beings, violence between nations, violence between communities, because there's so much violence towards animals. And Srila Prabhupada made that link when he said that if there's animal killing in the world, then there will be conflict, there will be war, and there will be other types of unrest. And therefore, thank you so much for bringing up this point, reminding us that we want to try and be as non-violent as possible. All right, thank you so much. There's really a lot of questions coming in. Here's another question that's come in. I'm just going to read it from my phone. This is from Pratik, and Pratik asks, I have my purpose in life, but at the same time, I have all these desires that come in my mind. And what happens, or how do I deal with it when my desires divert me from my purpose? How am I able to stay focused on what my purpose is? So thank you, Pratik. That's a great question, and something that's on all of our minds. Here is a really important mantra. Don't give up what you want most for what feels good now. This is the art of life. If you can ingrain this within you, don't give up what you want most for what feels good now. If you're able to ingrain that mantra within your consciousness and let it guide all of your decisions, watch your life transform. So, Pratik, what I want to say to you is it requires some discipline, and discipline is uncomfortable. But shall I tell you what's more uncomfortable than discipline? Regret. The pain of discipline is uncomfortable, but the pain of regret is unbearable. And so in those moments where desires come that we know are not beneficial, are not going to take us to our cherished aspiration, one thing we can do is remember our goal. Remember the amazing thing that we're aiming for. And when we become so captured, so enchanted by that why do I exist? What's my purpose? When we become so consumed by that beautiful purpose that we have in our life, then the fleeting desires, the fleeting emotions, the fleeting temptations, we won't allow them to divert us away. So it's a great question, Pratik. Another thing I would say, if you want to stay fixed on your purpose and not be diverted by desires, is choose the right life for yourself. Surround yourself in the right environment. Develop the right habits. Surround yourself with the right people. Develop the right lifestyle. Because when you create the right life for yourself, then you'll find that all of these desires that divert you away will gradually become less and less prominent. But when we have the wrong lifestyle that doesn't suit our purpose, then the barrage of desires will be much greater. So those are some thoughts. These are all big topics. You guys' questions are amazing. Thank you so much. There's over 60 of you online. I really appreciate you taking the time. Hari Priya is asking, how do we share spirituality with those who are near and dear to us without being insensitive, especially in the context of struggles in their lives? The first thing is, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So the first way in which to help anyone in their life is you have to become a friend. Become a friend of the people. Become a friend of all these individuals that you want to help. Show them that you care. Show them that you don't have an agenda more than their own well-being and their own prosperity and flourishing in their lives. First, you have to be someone's friend. And then when they know that you have their best intentions in mind, then they'll be much more open to hearing from you and taking your words of wisdom. Another thing is, one way in which we can help people come closer to spirituality without even saying anything is by our own example. St. Francis of Assisi, he said, "I preach every day. I preach 365 days a year. I preach week in, week out. And now and again I say something." In other words, your actions speak louder than your words. Sometimes they say your character is speaking so loud, I can't hear what you're saying. And therefore, Haripriya, think about that. Number one, become people's friends. Number two, be a great example yourself. And number three, when you're sharing knowledge with them, try to understand what are their needs, interests and concerns, and then relate the knowledge so it relates to their needs, interests and concerns, and they'll be much more likely to take it up. Thank you so much. I'm scrolling down to see what other questions might be there amongst all of you. Just give me a second. Apologies if I say this wrong. Manasa Valia is asking, how can we avoid being sad or disappointed because of material problems and misery? Thank you so much, and thank you for asking a question that's on all of our minds. The medieval saint Jiva Goswami, he explains the reason why the Bhagavad Gita exists. And he points to one of the first verses that Krishna speaks in the Gita, and he points to the last verse that Krishna speaks in the Gita, or his last major instruction. Krishna's first major instruction in the Gita in Sanskrit, asocya nanva socastvam pragyavadamscha bhashashe. Socha means lamentation, misery, sadness. The first thing Krishna says to Arjuna is, why are you sad? Why are you lamenting? And the very final thing that Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita is, moksha yishyami ma sucha. That same word comes, socha. He says, don't worry, don't be in anxiety, don't be sad, don't lament. So the medieval saint Jiva Goswami, he says, the fact that the Bhagavad Gita is sandwiched between these two words, lamentation and lamentation, and Krishna specifically saying don't lament, shows that the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita is to help us realize we shouldn't lament. So your question is what the whole Bhagavad Gita is meant to answer. But in short, you see, what we have to do is we have to realize there's a bigger picture going on. There's a bigger aspiration. You see, when you see a kid and they're playing a computer game and they kind of lose, then they're going through all these emotions like, oh my God, I lost. And the parent is just watching, kind of laughing, saying, this kid's playing a computer game. These things don't mean anything in reality. Because the parent has a bigger vision of life. So what happens is when you internalize the knowledge of the Gita, your vision of life becomes so big that all of the things that happen here, you realize this is so transitory, it's so temporary, it's so insignificant in the context of the bigger picture, that none of those things affect you anymore. It's almost like if I put a handful of salt in a cup of water, then naturally it's going to feel salty. But if I fill up this whole room with water and then I put a handful of salt, you won't be able to taste any of it, because it's so vast, it's so voluminous, it's so deep. So our consciousness has to become like that. And therefore Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, those who see with the vision of eternity, we have to develop the vision of eternity. We have to realize this is just a chapter. I'm just passing through. All of these things that affect my body and mind may cause me some pain, but they don't need to cause me suffering because I'm the soul. I'm on a bigger journey. And beyond all of the ups and downs and roller coaster experiences and emotions of life, I'm heading towards something much better. No one can hurt me unless I decide to hurt myself. I want to share one verse with you. One of the great saints in our scripture, the Bhagavatam, he reflected back on his whole life and he's thinking, I suffered so much in my life. And then he came to the realization as to why he was suffering. And you know what he said? Nayam jano me sukaduka hetur na devatatma griha karma kalaha mana param karma mananti samsara chakram parivartayadyat. It's a beautiful verse. He says, I reflected on my life. What caused me suffering? Nayam jano me. I used to think other people were the cause of my suffering. I was wrong. Na deva tatma. I used to think maybe the gods were the cause of my suffering. I was wrong. Graha. I used to think that maybe the planets, my astrology, maybe that was the cause of my suffering. I was wrong. Karma. I used to think that maybe my own karma is the cause of my suffering. I was wrong. Kala. Then I thought maybe suffering just comes with time. Everyone has to go through it. I was wrong. He says, none of these things were the cause of my suffering. Mana param karanam. The param, the supreme karanam, cause. Mana is my own mind. And therefore, according to the narrative of our mind, we will experience a proportionate amount of sadness, moroseness, misery, depression. It's amazing. The state of our own mind is what drives the trajectory of our experience in this life. And the most amazing thing is how many people understand their mind. Of those that understand their mind, how many people are edifying and educating their mind? And out of those who have educated their mind, how many are elevating their mind? Very, very few. So the Bhagavad Gita contains so many verses and so much insight on one's own mind. And unless we control the mind, we are going to be experiencing so many different emotions in our lives. So I hope that helps in some small way. As I said, you guys are asking like all these deep questions. I'm trying my best. Here we are on Instagram. We're up to 72 people. Thank you so much for joining. Really appreciating it. Dev Parekh, 93, is asking, what is the connection between journaling and spiritual life? And would you be able to advise how one can start journaling? I'm going to do a little bit of a self-promotion here. If you go onto YouTube and you type in Journaling Workshop Sutapa, that was my previous identity. Nowadays they call me a Swami. But some months ago, I gave a workshop on journaling at ISKCON Columbus online. And in that workshop, I talked all about the importance of journaling and why it's such a beautiful thing. Let me say this. If I could introduce another regulative principle into spiritual life, I think one of them would definitely be journaling. When I journal, when I write down my thoughts of what I've been experiencing and going through in life, and I see the words in front of me, and I start working with those words, editing those words, rearranging my thoughts on paper, then I find when I'm editing my words, I'm editing my own consciousness. If there's something that's been majorly transformational to my life, it's journaling. And let me say this to all of you on the call, because I'm sure many of you on the call have tried journaling before. And maybe some of you haven't, and maybe, hopefully, you will be inspired to start trying. But one common thing that happens when you start journaling is you start just feeling as though what you're writing is very shallow, what you're writing is very inconsequential, what you're writing is frankly a little bit dull and boring. And after about 2 or 3 days or 2 or 3 weeks or maximum 2 or 3 months of journaling, you just decide to throw in the towel. But let me share this with you. When you're journaling, when you're looking at your words and you feel like I'm shallow, I don't have much to say, there's nothing much happening in my life. Why am I writing all these things every day? It's just like a log of accounts, a log of events. When you're feeling that way, that's when you close your eyes, you search a little deeper within your heart, and you try to bring out the deeper thoughts, the deeper emotions. That's when you force yourself to look beyond the superficial. And it's in those moments when you dig deeper, faced with your own superficiality, when you're forced to dig deeper, that you actually begin to find the jewels that are in your own consciousness, the jewels of wisdom that are sitting there within your heart. Deeper realizations, emotions, thoughts. So don't be intimidated. When you feel like you're journaling and it feels like really superficial, that's the best time, because that's when you're going to start getting deeper. And when you start getting deeper, that's when you begin to find the real jewels. So thank you so much, Dev, for that question. We're going to take one or two more questions and we're going to wrap it up at 8:40, because we're not going to go on and on and on. But we are, if you think it's a good idea, we're going to maybe try and do this every single week. So show us your love if you do feel it is a good thing to do, and we will try our best. Okay, so yeah. Makunst is asking, firstly he says, thank you for doing this. Well, thank you for being here. We wouldn't be doing it if you wouldn't be here. So thank you so much for the opportunity to share something. What should I do if I like to stay in a spiritual environment like a temple, but loved ones want you to stay at home? So what should you do? You're torn apart. Of course, every situation is different. In some situations, you have to follow your heart. Sometimes to find yourself, you do also have to accept that loved ones won't always be happy with your path in life. And that's difficult. Most of us live an inauthentic life because we're scared of letting others down. But sometimes we have to follow our heart. Sometimes we have to follow our calling. And sometimes even those ones that love you, they may not understand you fully, and they may not understand your journey. So sometimes you do. That's the price you sometimes have to pay to follow your dreams. But now let me balance it. Sometimes your loved ones, those friends and family, those people in your life, they may have an insight into your life that you may not be aware of. And so they're telling you to do something which is against your immediate desire, may be helpful for you to hear that. And so in order to balance these two things, I would say this. Take advice, take guidance from those who love you, those who know you, those who have some spiritual vision to really help you on your journey. And look deep within your heart. Take their advice really seriously. But then ultimately, you have to look in your heart and find your path. We each have to walk our path. So it's a general answer. Take advice from everyone. Take the advice of those who know you, love you, and have the spiritual vision to help you. Take their advice more seriously. And after you've taken all of that advice, follow your heart and follow your aspirations and trust yourself to go on that journey. And remember, Krishna, the Divine, is in your heart and He'll help you to find your path. And remember, whatever path you take, there's never you're never on a dead-end route, you know. Even if you feel like in my life I missed out, I made a wrong decision, I missed out on that opportunity, you shouldn't think that there's not a way forward. There's always a way forward. And so even sometimes if we think we made the wrong decision, don't worry. You can make it back. We can all make it back. Okay, we have another question here from Hari Kanta, who is asking, how do we become humble and give up our ego? Of course, ego means identity. So we don't want to give up any, we need an identity, but we want to give up the false ego, the wrong identity. And what's the false ego? That I'm the controller of everything and that I'm the enjoyer of everything. And so how do you give up your false ego and become humble? Hari Kanta, let me just give you something hopefully very practical here. In every situation, just try to be a servant. If you're in a position of leadership, then try to serve those people who are looking up to you. If you're a parent, then try to serve your children to be the best they can. If you're a child, then serve your parents in gratitude for everything they've done for you. In any given situation, try to always think, how can I be a servant in this situation? How can I contribute? How can I be a giver? We live to give. And therefore, humility, I would say, more than an emotion or more than a state of mind or more than a set of characteristics, is the constitution within someone that they feel in every situation, how can I become a better servant of others? And in being a servant, you naturally become humble. But if you lose that spirit of how to be a servant in every situation, when there's a conflict between two people, be a servant and try to elevate the discourse. When someone is going through pain, be a servant and try and help them to come out of their misery. When someone is trying to achieve something great in their life, be a servant and see how can I assist this person to achieve this great thing. Just always try to be a servant. And in being a servant, then I think we will all become humble. Because, you know, sometimes it's easier to to act yourself into a new way of thinking than to think yourself into a new way of acting. And so let's just be a servant and let's just always try to do something nice for others. So many friends are joining. Ravi, Jay Baladev, Rishi Bajaj. Nice to see you all. Ashmita, nice to see you. And we're coming up to 8:40, and this was my cutoff point, but what can I say? I don't know how to answer all these questions. There's so many things. Okay, let me finish with one final question. Urvi is asking, there seems to be a contradiction between the holy name being in every town and the degradation that we see around us. So how do we balance those two things? On one hand, there's all these amazing predictions of how the world is gonna become spiritualized by this divine sound vibration. And on the other hand, we see all of these things happening in the world, a world in which the future doesn't always seem very, very bright. So how do we reconcile the two things? We're living in a world in which Krishna has already said what the basic constitution is. In the Bhagavad Gita, he says, Mamupetya punarjanma dukhalaya mashashvatam. This material world is a place of misery, and it's a place in which everything is temporary, everything is transitory. What can I say, Urvi? We can't change that. That is the nature of the world. That's what's on the label, and that's what's in the formula. We can't change that. Yet what we can do is bring goodness into the world, bring goodness into people's hearts, bring hope. Yes, there may be a rain shower outside, but we can give people an umbrella. We may not be able to change the whole world, but we can change hearts, we can change individuals. Once there was a guru walking along the beach, and all these crabs had been washed onto the beach, and you know, it was uncomfortable. They were out of the water, out of their natural territory, and there was thousands of them. And the guru was picking up one crab and throwing it back in, and then he was walking down picking up another crab and throwing it back in, and the disciple said, it's useless, there's thousands of crabs here, what kind of difference are you going to make? And the guru said, it will make a difference to the one or two or five or ten crabs. It will make a world of difference. It will change their life. It will bring happiness to them. I may not be able to change everything, but I can change some lives. So Urvi, what can we say? We may not be able to change the world, but we can change people's lives. You can go out tomorrow equipped with the spiritual knowledge and the wisdom and the love that you have in your heart, and you can change someone's life. Isn't that amazing? When you wake up in the morning, you can think, today is an opportunity for me to change someone's life. I may not be able to change the world, but I can change someone's life. Is that any less significant? Is that any less glorious? Is that any less amazing? So degradation will go on in Kali Yuga, but in the midst of that, there will be beauty. There will be amazing miracles. Hearts will be touched. Lives will be transformed. And amidst the darkness of this age, there will be flashes of beautiful light. And the more souls that there are in this world who embody that light and who share it with others, the more this world will light up in the midst of the darkness that's inevitable. So let's be those agents of positive change, and let's see what we can do to make the world a better place. So here we are. It's been so amazing. Srina, thank you so much. She's saying, hope you do many more of these. You're so kind. Thank you, Himesh. I hope you're recovering from your injury. It's so nice to see you. Selini Yoga, Dimple, thank you so much for being online. You all are amazing people. Jason, my old friend. Thank you so much. And Adriel, a heart of gold. Tiku, thank you so much. It's been amazing being with you all. It's 8:45 and monks are always on time. So I'm not going to hold you. I wish you a wonderful rest of the evening wherever you are in the world. I am currently, maybe I shouldn't say where I am. I'm in hiding. I've gone undercover for a couple of days to nourish my heart, but I'll be out and about this weekend. So maybe we'll see you along the way. What can we say? Social media is so nice. We can use it in a nice way to connect and to elevate our paradigms of life. And that's what we try to do this evening. And I hope to connect with you all more and more. And say a prayer for me. I'm in this social media world, entering it all. Srila Prabhupada went to the Lower East Side, and Instagram for me is like my Lower East Side. But it's amazing. It's wonderful to be with you all, and I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope to see you all again very soon. So yeah, you can do whatever you do at the end of an Instagram. Show the love, show the waves, show the thanks to everyone else on the call. And we hope to connect with you again very, very soon. Good night. God bless. And as they say on Crime Watch, hope you don't have any nightmares, but you have rather wonderful dreams. Take care.